There again. So we're holding in the pace of study Zion by the three dots. Teres Amidus, see Avidos and Shabbani Aliyah. So this is the Bnei Aliyah, this is where I've written Teres Amidus. Yes, Bnei Aliyah, but the reign of Kamoy Bechol Dor. There's a limited amount. Even though there's many, many more Bnei Torah, there's still a limited amount of Bnei Aliyah. Bnei Aliyah, there's that Maskilim, Madrega, Yosef, and Mucham, Yashem, and there's a Kedmim. And we're starting from a lower point. The challenges are even greater. Okay? We're not going to have a debate and bring proofs to it. It's a fact. How do I know? Okay. But the Mishnah are over about some in a royal attempt to a Kamalia, a Tikkun, a man of a whole. So I said, I don't see any problems. I think we're fine. It's just a raya that you're not in the Aliyah track, and therefore from your vantage point everything's wonderful. I tell you some stories about you know how our madrigas are less than previous dollars. Say one thing. I once asked her, told Shiva that I felt embarrassed. So first of all, Shiva Kaim said, you know, that Gifter came from America and he used to see things with a little bit more of a fanciful eye than they really were. It wasn't as good as he thought it was. That was what Shiva Kaim one time said.
He saw Europe to be more hot. He saw the people in Europe were better than
Gifter. Right, we're correct. That's what Shiva Kaim one time said.
But really, the Bachman were not as good as Gifter made them out to be.
Right, that's what Shiva Kaim said. But that being said, one time I asked Shiva, like, I feel embarrassed, like in his description of the base medrash and tells and the Bachram and tells, like, you know, it's a barak what a 30-year-old is like, you know. You know, the 18-year-old is like a 30-year-old.
At best.
You know. So it's embarrassing. So Shiva told him, he says, you don't have to be embarrassed. There was nothing else to do. There's no distractions. They lived in a world where there's no distractions. I mean, poverty was a distraction. If you overcame the distraction of poverty, like, what was the excitement? My mother-in-law used to describe it as excitement in town. The Magid would come to town. That was excitement. Like, there was, they had these itinerant Magidim, we still go around from town to town. They would give a drasha, put out their hat to get a few pennies. That's how they survived. You know, some of them were gone to Kishmak, but that was excitement in town. Like, imagine the excitement in town was, you know, like, you know. So you can imagine from that vantage point, you know, so you might as well learn, like, you know, if you're not working, you might as well learn. Like, there's nothing else to tempt you. It says the temptation which they had was the ideologies which were promised to take you out of poverty. You know, she get involved in these different ideologies but promised to solve the problems of class. That was where the fights were. Right? You know, is it socialism? Is it Zionism? Is it Bundism? Is it, you know, is it nationalism? What is Zionism? Each one had its argument how we're going to solve the problems of class. So that's what the Yetzer Hara is. The Yetzer Hara to do anything to Taiva. What? There's no time. Shiva described his family was middle, was, you know, was low to middle class American. He came to Tells and they had breakfast, they had a dining room, you know, they had to pay for the food. She would give a stipend. So he bought an egg and had the cook make an egg for him. Listen, Dad, you know, this morning, there's only one person who has an egg. That's the only time he ever bought an egg. Says he used to eat Shabbos sudas.
You know, he brought money from America.
Right, but like, he was embarrassed. You know, like, nobody could afford an egg. You know, says they couldn't afford coffee. They took chicory roots and they dissolved it into hot water, and that was the coffee. Says tea was also expensive. Tea they had, but it was more. But coffee, forget about it. But he says he ate Shabbos suda by an accountant. For me, it was an accountant. He was considered like one of the Gevurah people. So this yid was able to afford fish for Shabbos. No meat. He had fish for Shabbos. That was Gvirishkeit. That's called being rich. It tells, you know. It's like, so he said to me, like, what was the there was no Yetzirah. Like, there's nothing else to do. So you sat and learned. Also, their stamina was much greater. Physical stamina was much greater. They were used to, you know, difficult work. Shiva didn't tell me this. I don't know what it's like in Tells. I don't know. I never asked him. I should have asked him. I never thought about it. But one time I met a yid, came to Cleveland for his grandson's chassid. He was a Moshe Feinstein's first cousin. He looked like a Moshe. First time I saw him, he looked like a Moshe. It was freaky. There's a yid that he came to America. He had been working, whatever he'd been doing. Towards the end of his life, he retired. All his family was, you know, children that were in America, etc. He wanted to sit and learn. So he copped it, and he couldn't afford to live on his Social Security. He could not afford to live in America, you know, and not do something. So he picked up and moved to Mexico City because the cost was very cheap over there.
He rented it. Security's very expensive there, though, right?
Well, this was in the 80s. So he rented a little apartment, you know, one room apartment right near the Kaila over there. He said, learned all that. Like, that was suck, it was yid, you know. Right? See, he learned by Rabaron Kletzk. So I figured, I yid to learn by Rabaron Kletzk, I have to speak to him. So I asked him to describe the Seder HaYom of Kletzk. So he said the davening was 7:30, even in the summer, which was considered very late. Because the sunrise was very early in those areas. Then they would have breakfast. The first set of 7 to 9 o'clock. Went from 9 till 3. That was the first set. The Domenico. And then they had the main meal of the day, which was Fleishig. If the Shiva, you know, we have to serve for Fleishig. And the second set of 7 or 4 until 10. Then they Domenico Arif. And they had the night meal. The night started at 11.
Oh, they say it started at 11. No, really.
So they had 10 o'clock till Mar was almost in 20. You ate something. It gave you a few minutes to rest. To, you know, 5-10 minutes to rest. And night started at 11 o'clock.
And what did they learn from 11 to when?
He says that Rav Aaron very rarely left Beis Hamikdash before 1 or 2 in the morning. Rav Aaron was there at the Bochum State. That's why Dawn was so late, because I was there at 7:30. So I asked him, so what was the Musr? So he said, Musr was the last half an hour, second set, before Mark. Okay. Asked him, when did Rav Aaron say Shir? Rav Aaron said Shir at the end of the first Seder. And the days Rav Aaron said Shir, at the beginning of the second Seder, they would cause over to Shir. Asked him, what was Elul like? Like, you know, what do you add already? Like, you know, you need more test during Elul. Okay, so, okay, you know, like, you know, what do you add? He says, we daven more intensity. I said, okay, how many kashas anymore? They begin to do it at home.
Right.
You learn two 6-hour storm a day, plus a little, like, another hour or two just to fill in, you know, the gaps. I mean, that's a pretty decent Seder HaYom. So then I understood why when I spent like a kufa in Lakewood. I lived in Lakewood for a few weeks in 1977. So Mincha was 8:30. For summertime, Mincha was 8:30. Second Seder was 3:30 till 7:30. No, 3:30 till 8, I think it was. And then there was Musa Seder from 8 to 8:30. And then there was Mincha. Lunch was Fleishig. But it wasn't a stira because by the time you got to supper, lunch was at 1:30. They had a long lunch break, actually. They had 2 hours. 1:30 to 3:30 was lunch break. But you ate lunch at 1:30. You ate supper at 8. Mincha was 8. Musa was at 7:30 until 8. And Mincha was at 8 o'clock. And supper was 8:30. And then you went back to night Seder. Like, so, but they sat and learned, you know. Picture, you know. So that was they were much stronger people. So compared to those Duras, you know, we are definitely we have much greater challenges. There's the Timtum Alev, the Tuma, the Miyuta, the Havana. Okay. Teres Amidus Nitzkasi, but Teres Amidus is eternal. Hilchos Deis Loi Lois Hilchos Shabbos, it's not any less important than Hilchos Shabbos. Okay. How to work on the midas? This pashat sosum. You're just in those things. You can understand that. That's much easier to understand. Lumas, Taurus, Amidus. That's Nua Baskura, which is pretty much put away. Kamar Hashem, I tell a Kahoma Kahmosoi, my soul, Hagibor, Nigura Soi, my soul, Shir, Biashroi. What?
Everybody reads the Saptor.
Yeah. Saptor of Tishab morning. Kimazoi, she shall help me sell it. I'll ask it. That's it. Kinishamai said, Chesed, we should talk about Keep a look of Vatsim of Hashem. That's the last two psukim. That's where you switch from the Echad Nigun to the regular Nigun. B'diyas Akel who alechas b'drocha lasus chesed mishpat stoka kichen oisa oisom who. That's what Haskel Yudar Oisi means, to find the way to follow the ways of Kadosh Baruch Hu chesed mishpat and stoka. Okay, so what is he saying now? It's a fascinating thing. If you learn Ali Shur Chelik Beis, you learn Ali Shur Chelik Aleph, you feel like Pasha is written by a different person. So there are many differences between the two Svarim. But there's two differences. One of them he writes about, both of them he writes about in the introduction to Chelik Beis. The second point is not what we're going to talk about right now, is that he writes that he came under the influence of Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner moved there to Israel, so he came under the influence of Rav Huttner. So Chelik Beis reflects that fact. But the first point that he says is that when he wrote Chelik Aleph, Chelik Aleph was written in the 60s. He says that the people he wrote it for did not want him to write it Rocha Mitzvah Ketan. It was a getter of a tein lechachem yachamoid, right? That you give an idea to the chachem, and I don't know, he develops and expands it, and therefore by doing so, he's kind of, it's his, because he had to develop it and expand it. So you give him the Rosh HaProkim, and from the Rosh HaProkim, he figures out the whole Yisrael. So Halach Shachelik Aleph, you notice, is very much, you know, giving you some basic concepts that you have to develop into practical, the mice, etc., very much left up to your imagination. He says, during the time of his lap from the Chelik Aleph, there's been a change in the desire of the Bnei Torah. They want much more clear direction. They need much more clear direction. So much Chelik Aleph is much more direct in how to deal with things. He doesn't see that necessarily as a milo, right? But at practical level, that's what we need, you know. Like he says, now it became a Torah Shabbat Peh, almost to the point that only maybe midaita, which means I'm going to give you, that's what the Mor says, you only give over the Rosh HaProkim to some person who's a Chacham and maybe midaita. So that's really what the Baalei Musa always chose, was individuals who were of that dark. You know, in all the generations, you know, the at least the ones we hear about, I imagine there's many we didn't hear about, but you know, you could probably make a hackish for the ones we hear about, the ones we didn't hear about. It was very much a person who was able to sit and to contemplate and to think, to really get to know themselves, understand what's challenging them, what their motivations are, what their issues are, and get what the Mahalach of Avodah was to work on those things. And if you didn't get it on your own, that would indicate probably that, you know, that it was hard for you to, it's very hard to integrate something which you hear from somebody else, right? Imana neely meely means, you know, so the one of the first ones says the Rav, somebody says the Ben Yonah says it also. Maybe it's the Ben Yonah on the office. It says it in Shari Tshuva. Ben Yonah on the office and in Shari Tshuva, he says it means that if I don't work on the working on myself, mayu ilu hamusarim, what does it help you? The musar you're going to get if you don't work on yourself. So that's an part. It's not the gaya. So it's that being said, we have a new crowd, which they want. They really want, but they're. As opposed to having learned a lot in the arena of life, which they did, the yeshiva pointed out one time. He said that, you know, any person was in yeshiva in those days in yeshiva because they wanted to be in yeshiva, especially between the two wars. Between the two wars, there's a tremendous uptick in the haskalah, etc. Like many places which had maintained their Yiddishkeit over the, just by default over the generations in the little shtetl. The First World War, where everybody went into exile and people ran away, destroyed all of that. So any person who was in yeshiva because he wanted to be in yeshiva. Being in yeshiva was considered like the attitude towards yeshiva bachurim was horrible. So any person chose to be in yeshiva because he really wanted to be there. So that itself would represent a tremendous madrega of gevura. So they were bali ruach already. They were chashav in the people. And how many people were in yeshivas? The mere yeshiva now has more bachurim in it than all of the yeshivas had put together before World War II. We've seen Tells and Platsk and Mir, etc. The mere yeshiva was 250 bachurim. Tel Shiva was 400 bachurim. Klatz was 100 and something bachur. They were little. They were, you know, of all the chashuva literacy yeshivas altogether, there was Meir Yeshiva now has more bachurim. Forget about the Yigalai. More bachurim now in Meir Yeshiva in Yerushalayim than there was all put together. It's a mind-boggling thing. You know. So, but these people we do want, but we need help. That's why it's an Alishur Chelavayz, because Alishur Chelavayz doesn't work for us. To some extent, but the challenge of the Shur Chelik Alev is that when you do get it now, Chelik Alev, you got it because you worked on it, you figured it out, you developed it, you understood it, you understood yourself, you understood what the Torah is talking to you, and you chap what's going on. It's much more of a real kinyan, almost automatically, before you even start working on the Midah, than Chelik Beis, where he spells it out for you. That's, I think, the point that he's saying over here. Okay, one last point over here. Oisik b'tarsa midas halacha l'maisa who oisik b'das bara. The person who's oisik with tarsa midas has been oisik b'das bara. So, we don't know Kadosh Baruch Hu. We have no awareness of Kadosh Baruch Hu. We have no. The Bereshis being is an infinite being, bound the ability to the mind to grasp in any way, shape, or form. The Baal Tanya has a lashon where he says that just like a hand, a physical hand, cannot grasp a thought, the human mind cannot grasp a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The dimension of grasping a thought is way beyond the physical dimension of a hand. So the dimension of Kadosh Baruch Hu, what he is totally beyond the ability of the human mind to grasp. It's a different dimension. So, but there's a mitzvah of Yediyas Hashem. So what does that mean? It means the version revealed to us certain aspects of his being. Or, if you want to be more correct, Rav Chaim says the Bereshis reveals some certain aspects of what he wants us to perceive as his being. He created a reality which we interface with. Right? That's according to the Rambam. There is a bria called Shechina or Kvod Hashem. It's a bria the Bereshis created. Right? And we interact with that. And the Bereshit wants us to know certain things about it. And those are the hagas the Bereshit runs the world with. So the idea of Yediyas Hashem is to become aware of and the Rosh Hashem wants us to know what those are. So Rosh Hashem wants us to know the Midah of Tzedakah, of Chesed, of Mishpat, of the Chesedim, all the Midahs of the Rachum, Chanun, that Rosh Hashem is knowing the world. The Rosh Hashem wants us to know about that. So that's called Yediyas Barim. But number one. Number two, you don't really know that. You know, again, the word yediyah doesn't mean, it means an intimate understanding and knowledge of it. I cannot philosophize and understand that. The person who doesn't is not imbued with the whole mahus of the concept of chesed, of going above and beyond for somebody else and being a giver and not a taker, doesn't understand what it means to be a giver. It doesn't understand the Bershams and Haga of Nesina. But a person who does, I just give you a mashal. I said over for the shmuz, perm shmuz, a few weeks ago, I said over Sfas Emes. I'm not giving over the whole shmuz in 4 minutes. But in that shmuz, that, you know, I said over that one of the other chassidus said the following teretz to answer the famous question. Famous question, you know, we learned in Sosher, you know, Perek Aleph, person living in the Tanakh of Hashem. That's a Rosh Hashem created the world because he wants to be made to the Briyam and wants to give to us. We're created to be able to receive that pleasure. Okay, so the bottom line, it's all about us getting pleasure. Good. Mishnah says, you should not be like a Rosh Hashem as a Rabbah Manasseh Kabbalah for us. That you shouldn't do it in order because you want to get the benefit. So what's the pshat? So he said like this. So he said that the Rosham wants to give, and that's his biggest pleasure. And I want to be made to Kadosh Baruch Hu and give him pleasure. But what's his biggest pleasure? His biggest pleasure is giving to me. So I'm doing my avodah in order to be made to Kadosh Baruch Hu that he should be able to give to me. So how do we know if it's about him or me? So let's say something. You know what, Ryan Gold, I have a better idea. You know what, I'd rather give it to Nachum Schwartz instead. So Ryan says, I'm happy. Because my goal was to give Rosh Hashem pleasure. The Rosh Hashem wants to be made to, but he's taking now, by me doing what I've done, the Rosh Hashem says, now that you've done this Kedusha, you've added to the world, I'm able to be made to with Nachum Schwartz. So I pushed, I was made to, I made a Kedusha, I'm happy. So I'm happy. I didn't get the reward. What's it done with me? That's the word that he said. And, you know, you cannot say that word. You know, once you heard the word, you got, okay, you hear the word. You cannot come up with that word if you're not holding by the Madrig. There's a word from Rizal Tauber. It says, Veskanah Lashem. So, Siddiqim asked him out in the skin. So, good. It's a Poshim shot. Instead of using the scarf for their mice and type, they asked for free. So here's a Jew. The Jews are, you know, are cheapskates. So the marshal, listen, I could ask you to give it to me and pay for it. I don't want it. I want to ask him a ton of for free instead. Like, okay, you know, like, dirty Jew, right? You know, cheap Jew. You know, like, you know, is that the pshat? It says no. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Kadosh Baruch and he says, he says, imagine a person, a person's a multi-billionaire, it's 1938, and he hears that Hitler Yamashmai wants to wipe out all the Jews in Europe. But he hears he can be bought off, so he flies to Berlin, and he makes a meeting with the guy, and he convinces Hitler Yamashmai not to touch one Jew. To do this, he gives him every penny that he owns, every property that he has, he mortgages, he takes the clothing he has of his house, everything. He's left clothingless, penniless, homeless, nothing. He has no food. He saves 6 million Jews. So he comes out and he hasn't eaten for 2 days. He turns his eyes everywhere and says, I'm hungry. I don't deserve, you know, what I did, I don't deserve lunch. He says, Rabbi Shalom, you were made to me. Saving one human life is like saving a whole world. You allowed me to save 6 million lives. I owe you so much for the chesed you did to me, allowing me to do such a schus. I can never pay you back an iota in my whole life. I can never get near a mashu of what I owe you for the schus that you gave to me. But would you mind, I could also have lunch also because you're such a made to. That's my disturbing. You can't say that word unless you hold it by the by of thinking like that.